This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
OPEC cut 2 million barrels per day. That saw crude oil move higher on the day. On Wednesday, we saw mixed action with wheat and corn finding a little support, soybeans under some pressure, livestock trade finding a little support as well. Welcome to Market Talk. Great to have you with us here once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Plenty to discuss on the show today. Looking forward to getting into our discussions here, taking a look at what's happening in the markets and issues impacting rural America. Coming up here on the show today, we're going to talk more about that OPEC announced cut, 2 million barrels a day. Also, support in the wheat market amid the U.S. dollar rising once again on the day Wednesday. More fears about monetary policy kind of coming back into the market trade. Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, going to join us coming up here in segment two and three to discuss what he is seeing in the market trade right now and some things that we really need to pay attention to. Looking forward to another great discussion with Mike coming up here in just a little bit. Also, we're going to take a look at some of the headlines throughout the world of agriculture here today. More on this Sackett versus EPA case over waters of the U.S. We're going to talk about that coming up. The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. Some more, we'll call it skepticism there among farmers of how this ag economy is looking. We're going to talk about that coming up later in the show in segment four as I take a look at news headlines. All that much more going to be coming up later on in the show as well as we stay up to date with issues that are impacting rural America and farmers and ranchers. We'll talk more about the market trade, though, that we saw on Wednesday. I got a chance to catch up with Mark Lucas of StoneX. He filled in for Arlen Suderman for our midday commentary on Wednesday. I got Mark's thoughts on what he was seeing with the trade action on the day Wednesday with that OPEC cut, as well as the dollar and the monetary concerns and the global recession fears, all that pessimism coming back into the market. He talked about that much more and how that was all playing into the grain trade, the livestock trade, etc. on the day Wednesday. Also, StoneX on Tuesday afternoon released their October customer survey. They dropped their soybean yield down to 51.3 on that October customer survey. That was down from the September mark of 51.8. Meantime, the corn yield went up to 173.9. That was up from 173.2 in September. We asked Mark to start off our midday commentary, his thoughts about the October customer survey out from StoneX on Tuesday afternoon. Here's Mark Lucas.
You know, there's so much variability in what we're hearing in early harvest here that I'm a little bit surprised that some of the changes weren't even bigger. But, you know, I think some areas certainly we're hearing yields better than what they anticipated, and other areas it's worse, and it turns out to be not a heck of a big effect when it's all said and done. So we also built into this the change in some of the acreage, harvested acreage numbers from the September USDA report. And, you know, so production-wise, ends up not being all that dramatic of a change. We went from last month 14.168 to a 14.056, so a little over 100 million bushels there on corn. And beans, we went from a 4.5 to a 4.4. So, you know, net effect, not all that big. It's interesting, though, to look, you know, at the states and see, you know, what happened there. And, you know, it's kind of what you would expect. Eastern Corn Belt, you know, corn yields stayed pretty much the same or increased. And then as you move west into, you know, Minnesota, Missouri dropped quite a bit. North Dakota dropped a point or two. South Dakota dropped about 4 points, four bushels per acre on corn. And kind of a similar deal, you know, on the bean side of things. So, yeah, where the crop was good, it's probably a little bit better in general. And where it was average or not quite so good, things fell back just a little bit. So,
well, Mark, Wednesday's trade action, we see a little bit of support in wheat and corn, a little pressure in beans. We got a lot of factors swirling around this market trade. We have the dollar moving higher, more economic concerns, geopolitical concerns, also OPEC announcing a 2 million barrel a day cut in oil production. And I know all of that really kind of weighing into the ag commodity trade on Wednesday.
Correct. And, you know, I think you got to give pay a lot of attention to the oil thing here. I mean, you know, King Crude here is, you know, gaining some strength here today because of this OPEC announcement. They came out and said they're going to cut about 2 million barrels a day out of production. And the thought is that OPEC Plus, you know, they want to get the crude prices, which were, you know, floating around below 87. They want to get it well above 90 and try and keep it there. So today we traded above 87 on crude. That's the first time we've traded above 87 for probably about 3 weeks type of thing, or 20 sessions, something like that. So going forward, what's going to be interesting on the energy side of things is a couple deals in terms of demand. China here mid-month is going to visit about their COVID policy. Are they going to stick with the zero COVID policy and locking things down, or are they going to loosen that up a little bit, which would create more energy demand? And then also later this fall, Europe is going to ban Russian oil, supposedly, and what's the effectiveness of that going to be, and how's that going to affect the market? So, and thirdly, you know, the central government's perceived pivot that people are talking about. We've had a huge rally in the stock market the last few days because people are thinking, oh, they're about ready to pivot. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm not really sure where some of these people came up with their ideas that the things are going to pivot, but, you know, maybe it's because of what the Bank of England did last week. But history has taught us that when the Federal Reserve stops too soon, they really don't get inflation in check. And hopefully they kind of remember that as well. And that would kind of fly in the face of the idea of a pivot right now. So we don't really have a lot of concrete evidence that, you know, we do have inflation in check.
And again, that's comments with Mark Lucas of StoneX, filling in for Arlen Suderman for our midday commentary on Wednesday. We talked to Mark around noon on Wednesday, got his thoughts on the trade action as well as what he was seeing with that October customer survey from StoneX. And again, StoneX's October numbers, corn yield 173.9, bean yield 51.3. That's the first of many private estimates out this week ahead of the October WASDE report that is coming up next week on the 12th. That'll be another key report to watch in this market trade. Well, coming up next, we are going to have a discussion about that OPEC cut. We're going to talk about the wheat market finding support amid the dollar going back higher. We're going to talk probably ethanol production. I'm sure we'll get that in there as well, and much more surrounding this market trade with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He joins us next, back with more market talk right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, plenty to talk about in Wednesday's trade action. We got news from OPEC. We saw the dollar go back higher. We found a little support for a while, at least in wheat and corn, before we kind of backed off at the close, but a lot to really take in. Joining us today, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, good to catch up with you again, sir, and a busy week once again, no doubt. Plenty of stuff going on in this trade right now, Mike.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like this week, especially, Jesse, we're burning a lot of rubber, spinning our tires a lot, but we're really not going anywhere. And I think that's indicative of the trade really trying to get underneath and get their arms around some of these really big major fundamentals. And I think between the today, for instance, between the WTO coming out and essentially slashing world trade volume for 2023, going from almost 3.5% in their prior forecast about 3 months ago down to 1%. So I would call that zero, essentially. But between that and then this major shift in terms of our relationship, our geopolitical, our strategic relationship with OPEC in the Middle East and OPEC Plus, including Russia, with them countering and going directly against our wishes of not cutting supplies. And not only that, but cutting supplies double what we had thought initially. I really think we're in a pause right now in the trade, trying to understand exactly what is going on here.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in here. And let's start with the OPEC thoughts. I know you had a blog out last night talking about the OPEC potential cuts that did come to fruition, 2 million barrels a day, and the wheat market. But just walk me through some of your thoughts here, and I'll pull up on the video feed as well, the monthly crude chart, just for some perspective here to start. But Mike, what are you seeing with this OPEC cut and how it's tying into everything?
You and I have talked about the New East and the New West before. That's my new analysis for this year of trying to figure out why we're splitting up in kind of a geographic and emerging market pattern. In other words, the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, now Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and the UAE, all working against the United States and Japan and Europe. And those three being the new West, this OPEC decision to cut 2 million barrels a day, Jesse, adds to the validity of that analysis that there is a distinct difference between these two groups of countries, and they revolve around how fast a pace the new West is trying to curb fossil fuel consumption and go towards more climate-friendly consumption of energy. And these countries not only produce a lot of fossil fuels, but they consume a lot. And if they didn't consume a lot, then their economies, and or I should say, if they didn't consume as much because prices were too high, their economies would fall dramatically compared to us in Europe and Japan. And so I really think that's where the battle lines are drawn. So that gets you to the idea of why did we see a 2 million barrel a day cut by OPEC Plus? Well, the first easiest reason is because the United States and Europe, led by our Treasury Department, want to put a price cap on Russian oil. But yet they want the Russian oil to continue to flow. And, you know, that's just not going to work. That's just not going to be something feasible in OPEC's mind, because you're essentially trying to limit the price of oil and still get the same volume out of OPEC Plus, meaning Russia. The deeper issue, I think, is, and this is what I'm doing to do more analysis on, is that I have a suspicion, a research analytical mindset that I want to try and support and validate, that the OPEC Plus countries want us to remain in a high inflation environment here in the United States and Europe, and really kind of strangle our supplies of energies, keep inflation high, because then that keeps our monetary policy on a very strong raising of rates and very contractionary when it comes to our economies. And so I think what they're trying to do at this point, and the White House said today that OPEC and Saudi Arabia are no longer really working with us, that they have taken the Russian side at this point. So I can say this with a little bit more validity than I said last night. I really think that if somebody's going to have an economic problem and a recession, the OPEC Plus nations and this new East group of countries want the Western countries to feel it the most.
Well, that's a very interesting thought, Mike. And we think about not only crude, but then you throw in the ag commodities, corn, beans, and wheat specifically. And I'd love just to hear your thoughts on this. I was reading through your blog and I wondered, you know, could wheat, which traditionally kind of follows the dollar up and down, could wheat team up with crude oil possibly here to go up and down? Because we saw on Wednesday, wheat ignored the dollar moving higher and for a while had some strength. So I'd love your thoughts on that thought, Mike.
Yeah, and this is not a 1 week or 2 week type of analysis that we're talking about, Jesse. And I appreciate you pointing, you know, that type of mindset out, because that's exactly what I'm trying to get at is that much like most of 2021 and early 2022, almost all the heavy lifting of the broad-based commodity rally was done by the crude oil, the vegetable oil, and the wheat markets. And so I could see, because of the continued supply and weather problems, along with OPEC, again, cutting supply. This is still that cost push, supply side inflation that we continue to contend with. And that's what really brings us our rallies. And I think that's going to continue. I could see where, much like what we saw in the first of 2022 up until May, we do see the wheat and the crude oil come back together. And that's obviously predicated on the idea that we don't see a sharp rally in the dollar. And, you know, this is where what we're looking at right now is the Deutsche Bank Agriculture Commodity Index. And what you see is the major low in 2020, thanks to the Federal Reserve saying they want inflation. Then they came in May, June and said, we don't want inflation. And they really hammered that home in August. And we lost the channel, that uptrending channel. But if you take a look at that chart in the bigger picture and go all the way back to that 2008 high that we were at in this specific commodity index, we have a long way to go to get back to the 2010, 2011, 2012 levels, let alone 2008 before the financial crisis. And so this chart is kind of signaling that it no longer wants to be in an uptrend, but wants to go sideways until it gets more information. That's kind of how I read it. So what I'll be looking for is, can the crude oil then go back up above $90 a barrel, head towards 100 plus a barrel, and that all of a sudden gives this channel a renewed life. And all of a sudden we're back in terms of a supply-led market that takes the broad-based commodities higher.
Mike, as well, I've noticed this week that, you know, KC wheat, Minneapolis wheat have had their days to move higher, but Chicago wheat, SRW, has found a little pressure here and there. What are your thoughts just with wheat as a whole as well, with planting going on across winter wheat country, although it's still very dry? I know that's one of the concerns. A lot of growers kind of dusting in that wheat. We talked about that last week. But as you look at how the three classes have worked together this week, what are your thoughts there a little bit?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you bring up, because you're right. The soft red wheat, I think, has more of the dollar feel to it right now. It doesn't have the weather supply side support that the hard red does. But, you know, you think about what USDA did last week. And since we talked, Jesse, with them taking the major production levels down, not just hard red, but also soft red wheat, I think the soft red would be a willing participant in the upside with hard red leading if we could calm that dollar down. And I think this goes back to, in this chart, we're looking at that purple line in this weekly SRW chart is that 52-week moving average. And then those two circles in this chart are, again, when the Fed decided to go from a very tight monetary policy to a very loose one and allow inflation in July, August of 2020. And then they reversed thrusters in a big, big way in that Jan, Feb, March time period and really hammered it home to us in August that they weren't going to let up. So I think what we're trying to do is rebuild the SRW, but we've got the dollar in our way. I am still of the view that if we really want a trend change, and this goes back to your earlier question and point, if we really want a trend change and we want the whole complex of commodities to go up, we really need the wheat and the crude oil and maybe even the vegetable oil market to once again lead.
Well, and again, that is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. We're having a conversation with him here today on Market Talk. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about cash basis, seeing some big drops in certain areas while still maintaining some pretty good premiums in others. I'm going to get Mike's thoughts on that. We'll talk the livestock trade as well. All that and more coming up as we continue with more Market Talk. We'll be back with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics on the way right after the break.
Oh, When it comes to protecting your investment in fuel and diesel-powered equipment, Diesel X Gold from FS clearly beats other diesel fuels. New detergents disperse contaminants to prevent sludge that plugs filters and causes unexpected downtime. And now, better moisture handling chemistry helps ensure your fuel stays dry, reducing microbial growth and fuel line freeze-ups. So when you're deciding what fuel to use, choose Diesel X Gold, absolutely the best fuel to power and protect your diesel equipment. Contact your local FS Energy specialist today or visit GoFurtherWithFS.com.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here today. Jesse Allen with you. Joining us today, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics, our guest analyst. And let's get back to our conversation here with Mike on today's show. Mike, let's talk a little bit more corn, soybeans from Wednesday's trade action. Corn seemed to follow wheat. It was kind of just trading a few pennies either side of unchanged all day. Beans had a little more pressure, though. Any thoughts with quarter beans after Wednesday's action?
Yeah, you know, the soybeans morning, because a couple indicators that I was looking at were suggesting that maybe we've got some sideways to higher trade. And being in November options, I don't want a sideways market because I lose premium. One of those indicators was the currency markets, and specifically the Chinese currency and the Brazilian currency. And both of those strengthened dramatically on Monday's trade, as it ended up being. And I think that's where the trade is right now, Jesse. We've got harvest pressure. We've got terrible river levels. We've got a really tough export market staring us in the face if we don't get a weather pattern change. And so I think that the fundamentals of the funds are really based upon the currency markets. Now, one other thing that maybe is going to be useful in probably a week or 2 weeks, maybe sooner, is the fact that the Russian pig prices in several key areas are now back at their highest level since mid-2021. So they're really up there. And that's really nice to know, because not only that, but the Dalian futures for soy meal in China is at about $610 a ton. That's the highest since 2012 for their meal futures market in China. You put those two things together and all of a sudden you maybe have a meal basing pattern in the not too distant future. And that would be really supportive historically. I really like meal markets that are leading the bull charge, because that's your feed side.
Mike, you mentioned the low river levels, and I'm glad you brought that up. I want to turn our attention maybe to some basis ideas a little bit here, because we've been hearing basis at certain locations, big drops. I've heard some big drops at Illinois on the river, et cetera, et cetera. What are you seeing when it comes to basis corn, beans, and how that ties in with this low Mississippi river level situation? Is there a correlation there?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, that's one of the things about doing the puts in the grains, Jesse, is I've got clients in Nebraska. A client in central Nebraska called me today and he said, look, I am getting $1.20 to $1.40 out of the field positive basis right now. And they're trucking it all the way from central Nebraska down to Garden City, Kansas for the feedlots. Should I buy puts or should I sell cash? And I said, that's, to me, if there is a no-brainer, and there's never a no-brainer, but if there would be one, that is, yeah, sell it, let it go. Don't pay the storage, especially if you don't have on-farm storage. But that was an easy call. About 2 hours later, I talked to an Owensboro client and he said, my basis has really fallen out of bed. Have you seen that? And I said, no, I haven't. And so after he got done talking to me, I pulled up some of the basis charts that I'm able to get through my software. And I decided to put this chart into our talk today. And the green line is the Owensboro spot basis. It's gone essentially from zero, a flat basis with Chicago futures, to a negative $1.10 in just a little over a week. And so that client was right on the money. And he said, not only that, but he said, if I wanted to put beans in an Owensboro elevator on the river, it's 75 cents to put it in. And so what I have here in the chart is the green line is the Owensboro cash basis, while the purple line is the Chicago corn in the futures market. You see the corn's been sideways for pretty much the better part of a month and is curling up a little bit even, but that doesn't matter. The basis still just tanks. So that is a clear, I think, footprint and fingerprint of what's happening with what's going on with these low river levels. And it sounds like it's going to get worse. Some of the key areas like Memphis, I'm hearing next week they may challenge their 1988 all-time low for Mississippi River level. St. Louis is in a world of hurt. I'm hearing Cairo's got barges stuck. I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard earlier today that down in Louisiana, there was a point where over 1,000 barges were trying to get through one point. So I think this is a major factor in terms of the headwinds that we have and why the market's probably not ready to jump in with both feet because of some of the supply tailwinds, the weather tailwinds that you and I have been talking about.
Mike, let's turn our attention to livestock here as well. You brought up that client trucking corn down to Garden City, Kansas to feedlot country. We've talked about that before. How are we going to get feed into feedlot country? Looking at feeder cattle, decent day on Wednesday. Actually, I was pretty happy with how things looked there after kind of a choppy week. Talk to me about what you're seeing in feeder cattle land, the cattle complex as a whole right now.
Yeah, I'm getting more neutral. I mean, the break in prices between the soybeans, the fat cattle, the hogs, the feeder cattle, I feel like the month of September did a lot of good for bringing back demand and taking the price down to find demand again. There is a gap in January feeders around 172.50, Jesse, that I'm really watching. So that's a couple $3 below the current market. Feeders are still, you know, highly correlated negatively with the corn market. That's probably why we saw the bounce on Wednesday. But I would also say that I'm getting a lot of reports in the central part of the country, Nebraska, Kansas, especially, of a lot of calf sales, cash calves going into the warehouse, going into the pole sale barns, and not getting nearly the price they were getting just a month or 3 weeks ago. So it suggests to me that we've got a bubble of supply in feeders on the cash side, but I think we're also basing in this market, and that's where this monthly feeder cattle chart comes into play. Now, this is only November feeders. This does not have it doesn't have a January in it, doesn't have September or August feeders in it. It's only got the November contract in it. And that's what I like doing with some of these specialty charts that I have access to. We're up against a support line on a channel. We're trying to hold last month's lows and also try and hold that line. If we would take that support line and white out and break through the bottom of the channel, then I think my undervalue level that's still about $10 lower may be something we'd be in the line of sights for, and especially if that was matched up with the corn rally. Now, at that point, I think as you get into the November time period, if we would see that, I would probably start being a buyer, or a re-ownership strategy would be designed in the January, because I think there's going to be a hole in feeders as we get past the Christmas holiday.
Mike, I just pulled up to look at the cash markets as well. Feedlot trade's been slow to start this week. A little activity coming in Wednesday afternoon, but not a whole lot. And it feels like it's pretty steady with what we've been seeing right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be stronger than we've seen in the last couple of weeks, or hold its strength, the 144 to 146. I think we'll get a lot of business done. What is there is out there because the ground beef prices are falling pretty dramatically. The 80% number is down at a level it would suggest to me that it's going to get a retail bid here, and the consumer is going to go after more ground beef in the month of November, especially. So I think the cattle market as a whole, I think, is pretty balanced at this point, Jesse, unless something new would come out to feed the bear. For me, the feeders would be the logical thing. When it comes to the corn market, for the fat cattle, it would be me being wrong about the hogs finding a base here.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the hogs. I don't want to forget our good friend pork. Fingers are crossed over here. Have we found some support in this hog market? It's taken a beating, a really strong day on Wednesday, but we saw a decent day a few sessions back, and then we fell further. So my thought is, have we found some support? What do you think?
I think we have, between the avian flu really starting to make more headlines in Europe, and I'm pretty confident it's going to make headlines over here, and also the fact that we do have that cash market, that cash index, well above where the October hogs are. I do think we've made a basing pattern here, and we have some upside, especially given what I talked about in the about the Chinese prices. They're still tight on supplies, and that's usually pretty good for our export market and usually means less about a strong dollar. So I do think this $90 level should catch a lot of support.
Well, Mike, I hear the phone ringing in the background. I know you are a busy guy here today. Before we run out of time and let you go, any other final thoughts for us?
No, I think that the what you do every week is so valuable, Jesse. And I just hope people, I know it's a busy time of year and I know there's a lot going on. And, you know, we haven't even touched the nuclear situation, but a lot of things happening. And that makes me generally go after paper positions until I can figure out more about what to do, especially when you have a bad, bad basis if you're near a river and can't get the exports out. So please consider working with me or getting a subscription, because what Jesse and I talk about every week, I think can help a lot. But you do such a nice job and a great service to the people, the ag community out there by what you do. And I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your analysis and your time as always. GlobalComResearch.com. That's where you can learn more. Sign up for a free trial with Mike. And Mike, appreciate it as always, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jesse. You too, sir.
And again, that is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics, our guest analyst here today on Market Talk. And we appreciate his time and analysis as always. Before we hit the break, let's take a look at closing numbers from Wednesday's trade. December corn up 1.684. March up 1.25. 6.90, 1.25. November beans down 13 to 3/4. 13.69 at 3/4. January down 13 at 13.80.5. Bean meal October down 50 cents a ton, 4.02.50. Bean oil for October 39 points higher, 69. Chicago wheat for December finished down 1902. March down a quarter penny, 915 at a quarter. KC wheat December 1.5 higher, 990 at a quarter. Spring wheat December 5.25 higher, 981.5. Live cattle October 47 higher, 144.67. December 42 higher, 147.92. Feeder cattle October up 190, 176.55. Lean hogs October up 380, 9080. We'll take a look at news headlines and wrap up the show coming up after this. Back with more Market Talk on the way.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here today. Thanks for joining us. Jesse Allen with you back in studio. Thanks to Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, for his insight here today. Right now, let's take a look at some of the latest news headlines impacting agriculture and rural America here on Market Talk. The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer's Farmer Sentiment Index dropped 5 points to 112 in September. The drop in farmer sentiment was primarily the result of producers' weakened perception of current conditions. The current conditions index dropped 9 points to 109, and the index of future expectations dropped 3 points to 113. Concerns about input costs and, in some cases, availability are key factors behind the relative weakness in this month's farmer sentiment. A growing number of producers expressed concern about the impact of rising interest rates on their operations. High input costs were cited as the number one concern by 44% of the survey respondents, while 23% chose rising interest rates. Another 14% of respondents chose input availability as their biggest worry. The Farm Capital Investment Index also dropped as producers continue to indicate now is not a good time to make large investments in their farms. The USDA quarterly hogs and pigs report released at the end of last week showed inventory was down 1% compared to last year, with 73.8 million head. Alton Kalo is the chief economist with Steiner Consulting Group and analyzed the bullish report.
Because most of the numbers that came out were on the lower end or outside of the range of the pre-report estimates.
Market hog inventory was 67.6 million head, down 1% from last year and up 2% from last quarter. Kalo explains how the survey works for hogs going to market.
USDA tells us, all right, how many hogs should we expect to come to market in the next 3-6 months? And they break it down by category. You know, what's the weight of those hogs? You know, how many hogs do we have that are 180 pounds and over? We probably have run through most of that supply because they probably came to market in September.
He said they are working to put the hogs and pigs marketing number in context.
Hog slaughter should be running at about 1.5% less than it was a year ago. October, early, mid-November, again, it's not precise. the number should be down about 1.2% from a year ago. And then December, January, February, which at least based on this survey, you'd expect the slaughter numbers to run down about 1.6% less.
Fewer hogs coming to market are a function of the smaller breeding herd and lower productivity. Sow's farrowing during this period totaled 3.02 million head, down 1% from last year. The sows farrowed during this quarter represented 49% of the breeding herd. A Mexican presidential decree to ban genetically modified corn in 2024 would have severe economic consequences for the U.S. and Mexican economies. A study from World Perspectives, Inc. says the move will result in a loss of billions for America's farmers at higher prices for Mexican consumers. The net economic loss for the U.S. corn industry in the first year of the ban will be $3.56 billion. The U.S. ethanol industry, including DDGs, will incur a net loss of $521.5 million after accounting for gains from lower GM corn prices. Overall, the U.S. economy would lose $73.89 billion in economic output. During a 10-year forecast, the GM corn ban will increase the cost of corn by an average of 19%. That will inflate the cost of most foods and other goods for Mexico. Poultry meat prices will jump by 67% because of a 13.7% increase in the cost of feed. Well, the National Corn Growers Association wants the USTR to challenge Mexico's potential ban on biotech corn. Tom Hagg, the newly minted president of the National Corn Growers Association, said Tuesday the group has several challenges ahead of it, including trying to push a USMCA dispute settlement case against Mexico to head off the potential ban on biotech corn as early as 2024. A possible ban on U.S. biotech corn going into Mexico is a looming trade issue, yet Mexico remains the top buyer for U.S. corn. Mexican buyers imported 16.4 million metric tons in the 22-23 crop year that ended September 1st, up more than 10% from the prior year, according to USDA trade data. Mexico has already committed to buying nearly 4.6 million metric tons for the 23-24 crop year. Now, initially, it was understood Mexico would institute some ban on genetically modified organisms in food-grade corn in 2024, as well as ban the herbicide glyphosate. Mexico stopped approving any new corn varieties involving glyphosate for import in 2018, but there's a lack of clarity from Mexican officials on just what exactly would fall under the import ban right now. Hague says, quote, as we get deeper into this, it gets tougher and tougher because it might ban going into our livestock feed. American farmers are not going to stop growing corn or GMO corn, end quote. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is calling for a pause in the EPA rewriting of Trump-era WOTUS reforms until the Supreme Court settles the confusion over the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate water bodies under the Clean Water Act. Regulatory whiplash is how National Cattlemen describe the shifting WOTUS definitions over the years, as the Supreme Court this week again tried to make sense of the Clean Water Act. And until the High Court decides on a proper test for which waters are waters of the U.S., Cattlemen CEO Colin Woodall is calling for a pause in EPA WOTUS rulemaking.
After all the work we did to fight back against the 2015 rule, here we have the Biden administration coming out and trying once again to bring WOTUS back.
At the Supreme Court, the test for EPA jurisdiction over an Idaho home lot near a lake was still unclear. This exchange between government lawyer Brian Fletcher and Chief Justice John Roberts.
So somebody looking around the lot would have to look at the wetlands, if they can see them, and the lake and say, is that reasonable proximity or not?
That's right. Yes, that is the standard. And
that's a standard that is used in criminal prosecutions as well.
With the wry hint that the government could prosecute a landowner if they got it wrong, longtime Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley calls for a traditional standard that covers only wetlands connected to navigable waters, not features like a usually dry creek.
Ridiculous. The best thing to do is to go with the historic definition of a navigable river. That's where the federal jurisdiction ends, and that's where the state jurisdiction takes over.
An argument akin to that of the plaintiffs in the long-running Sackett's versus the U.S. EPA case and the discussion over nearby versus directly connected. It's a case Grassley and NCBA say the Supreme Court must finally resolve for the sake of homeowners, farmers, and others. Well, that is all the time we have for Market Talk here today. Again, thanks so much for joining us. As always, coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined by Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing, as we continue to keep our eye on what's happening in the market trade. That's going to do it for Market Talk today. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
When it comes to protecting your investment in fuel and diesel-powered equipment, Dieselex Gold from FS clearly beats other diesel fuels. New detergents disperse contaminants to prevent sludge that plugs filters and causes unexpected downtime. And now, better moisture handling chemistry helps ensure your fuel stays dry, reducing microbial growth and fuel line freeze-ups. So when you're deciding what fuel to use, choose Dieselex Gold, absolutely the best fuel to power and protect your diesel equipment. Contact your local FS Energy specialist today or visit GoFurtherWithFS.com.